Citizens Oversight Committee, acting as Citizens Finance Advisory Committee.
We are ready.
Thank you. All right. Do we need to take a roll call?
Yes.
Okay. So roll call. Courtney Shepler, present. Stephen Peck.
Present.
Homer Alexander, present.
Michael Irwin, present.
Very good. Okay, next up, do we have any public comment before we begin the agenda?
AGP, do we have any public comment on the line?
Thank you, Chair. We have no raised hands in the queue.
Thank you. Okay, first on our agenda is the consent calendar, which includes approval of the minutes from the February 15th and April 28th meetings. February 15th was a regular meeting and April 28th was a special meeting. Is there any comment on the minutes?
I'll move to approve.
I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Going into our business items, item number one is discussion and input on the general fund draft proposed budget and six associated funds. Do we have any public comment on this item?
Chair, would you like to hear the staff presentation first and then perhaps take public comment?
That'll be fine.
Great. So I'll be giving the staff presentation. And actually, if I could, I just realized we skipped over the assistant city manager director update. So if it's all right with the committee, I can provide you with that before jumping into business item number one.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Great. So as a brief update, I wanted to provide you with an update on the broader citywide budget status. You'll be going into the general fund review and your first business item, but staff has been working around the clock to get the citywide proposed budget ready, and we are prepared to make that live this evening so that council and the public will have a full week to review the citywide proposed budget prior to the council's budget study sessions, which are scheduled for Tuesday, May 24th at 3:30 and Wednesday, May 25th at 5:30. So want to make sure the any public listening hears that, and we'll get a link to the budget on our website this evening. And I wanted to introduce you to and thank Kelly Mattis, who's here with me today, our senior administrative services analyst. She has been a lead contributor in the budget development this year and couldn't have done it without her. So thank you, Kelly. Also, by way of staffing updates, we have had continued turnover, but we are nearing the end of it because we've filled our final two vacancies. So we will be bringing on board a fiscal analyst at the end of this month and a new account clerk three later this week, actually. So with that, all of our positions in the finance division will be filled, and we are very excited about that. Would have been great to have a couple folks on board during budget development, but we will take them when they are available. And then switching gears, just to give you an update, some of you have been interested in the transition to contract out business license and TOT remittance services to HDL. We are live with HDL as of last week. And so they've been providing customer service online, on the phone, et cetera, to all of our businesses that are renewing licenses and all of our properties that are remitting transient occupancy tax to the city. Letters have gone out to everyone. We've been in touch with the Chamber of Commerce, with Visit Morro Bay, and are getting some questions from folks that HDL is resolving, but So far, things have been going really quite smoothly, and hopefully they stay that way. And then we are trying to fill the one remaining vacancy for CFAC. CFAC is being reduced from 7 members to 5 members as part of City Council's changes to the bylaws. So we've been accepting applications for the 5th seat. They were due originally on May 13th. We did not have any applicants for CFAC, and so the city clerk's office is currently evaluating extending that deadline. So we will keep you posted on that. And that concludes my update.
Thank you, and congratulations on getting your positions filled.
Thanks. There.
And did you want to go straight into the
That'd be great if there are no questions.
Yep. Thank you.
Okay, let me pull up my slides. Wait for the slides to come up on the live stream. There they are. Okay, so the item before you today, the first business item is to review the fiscal year 2022-23 draft proposed budget for the general fund and 6 related funds. And as a reminder, this is part of CFAC's bylaws, both past and present, to review the citywide budget, time permitting. It has been a challenge and continues to be a challenge for the city to develop the full proposed budget book. Many small cities don't actually develop the whole book until after budget adoption of the numbers. But Morro Bay's tradition, which is great, has been to try to develop the whole book in advance so that council can fully evaluate all of the context. That does mean that we're usually going right up until the deadline to get that whole proposed budget book done, as we are this year. So we thought it was most important to bring you the general fund, which CFAC also reviewed last year, and also this year to add 6 more funds, which we had prepared in time to issue your agenda. The 6 related funds are presented with the general fund in the city's annual comprehensive financial report. So we wanted to be consistent with that in our budget development this year. The recommendation, we'll start with the end in mind, and I'll put this slide back on at the end of the presentation, but the recommendation that's going to be before you is to receive these draft proposed budgets and provide input for city council consideration as needed. And they would consider your input at their May 24th and 25th budget study sessions. So here's a list of the funds that are before you for consideration today. I'll go through them one by one. I'll spend a lot more time on the primary general fund since that's really the city's largest operating fund. And the other funds are all either reserve funds or smaller related funds to the primary general fund. So, in fiscal year 22-23, the total general fund revenue budget is $18.3 million. That represents a 9% increase from the prior year budget. And the general fund expenditure budget totals $20.8 million. The difference there is primarily due to a number of planned one-time expenditures, which I'll go through in detail. So the general fund still has an operating surplus net of those one-time expenditures. And net of all interfund transfers and the one-time expenditures, the general fund expenditure budget will be $16.3 million, which a better comparator is that's up 5.8% from the prior year general fund budget. So up less than revenues are increasing, at least for this year. I'll go into a little bit more detail about the revenues. You can see the trend line here, and this chart is much clearer online when the budget goes live online, but you can get a sense of the trend line. The first 3 years are actuals, and then the final 2 years are budgeted numbers, so we still don't know our final actual numbers for fiscal year 21-22. The projected actuals that are throughout the budget are based on what is 8 months of actuals plus our projected actuals for the remainder, the remaining 4 months. Some cases that's easier to predict than others, and especially on the revenue side, as you know from your review of Measure Q&E, sales tax revenues come in 60 days delayed, and TOT taxes also come in after the fact. So it does get a little bit challenging to project some of the revenues exactly, but the projected numbers are our best estimates. And then to go into a little bit more about the primary general fund revenue sources, the property tax is the general fund's largest revenue source. We are projecting that to be up by 1% from the prior year budget. The prior year budget may have been a little high from the year before that, and we're waiting to see what our final actuals are. So we work with Slo County to get these fiscal year 22-23 projected numbers, and that's what is in the budget this year. TOT is the second largest source of general fund revenues. We have seen really great rebounds since the pandemic, and that's transient occupancy tax. We've seen really great rebounds. And working with Visit Morro Bay, they're not necessarily projecting that level of growth to be sustained during fiscal year 22-23. So the budget number reflects an increase of 2% from fiscal year 21-22. And then sales tax is the next largest revenue source. This does not include Measure Q&E revenues. This is just the base sales tax that the city receives. And we work with HDL on those revenue estimates. We are projecting those to be up 9% from the prior year, and that's a consistent increase for the Measure Q&E fund. So we project both sources of sales tax to be up 9%. And then revenues from current services. This includes a number of different current services, recreation classes, primarily fees for service that are paid by individuals that receive direct benefit from those services, so planning fees in some cases. And we're projecting those to be up roughly 6%, which is relatively consistent with the master fee schedule update that council just implemented. Also of note this year is that there will be a one-time transfer into the general fund, or we're proposing that there be a one-time transfer into the general fund from ARPA funds. This is the American Rescue Plan Act, federal funding for cities as COVID-19 relief. And the Treasury Department has provided a lot more flexibility for cities and is encouraging cities to use these funds to hire and retain staff, to maintain effective levels of service. So when we present the citywide budget, there will be a number of one-time expenditures that we're proposing for ARPA, around $500,000, and then the remaining $740,000 we're proposing to use those to support general services in the general fund. And then going forward, we will be presenting an updated forecast before budget adoption, but we are projecting revenue growth, as I mentioned, to level off in the future years and to be more within the 2-4% range.
What questions now are on this matter?
That's up to the committee.
I had a question on the property tax.
Mm-hmm.
Considering the kind of the 2% Prop 13 inflator, and as well as real estate has performed over the last year, I was surprised to see the 1%.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think is going on there?
I think it's a couple of things. I can't speak to in very great detail the prior year budget numbers and methodology. So just in looking back at those numbers and in the actuals year to date, as well as the 22-23 projections from the county, I didn't want to artificially increase that by the 3-4% because that would have been above the county's 22-23 projections. So there may have been, changes in the methodology either at the county level or the city level in budgeting. And also, there may be a lag in some of the recordation of the transfers as well. I know the county has had their own staffing challenges. So I don't know, honestly, what level that may be playing. So to be conservative, I stuck with the county projections.
So is your property tax assumption based on last year's roll rather than this year's roll hasn't been finalized yet?
It's based on, I think that would probably be a question for the county assessor's office, but they actually provide each city in the county a fiscal year 22-23 revenue projection. And so we used those.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a follow-up to that, I think it would be good where we're relying on outside sources for the assumptions around these to get some clarity around what those assumptions are. And then if we think there's, you know, naturally more information that's available that you can make assumptions from, that might be helpful. I had a similar question on the TOT with the new hotel rooms coming online. Is that part of the modeling that they do and part of the projections that they do?
For the largest, a great question, for the largest new hotel that's under construction, those are not in the 22-23 numbers because the hotel rooms aren't projected to be online until 23-24. So we would add those to the numbers in 23-24. And so the primary source of the TOT revenues is you know, working with Visit Morro Bay. And then also I have, you know, quarterly meetings with HDL about sales tax, and they also put out quarterly statewide projections on trends. And so the TOT projection is relatively consistent with what they're projecting may happen with sales tax in the latter part of 22-23. They project that growth may slow. So they're projecting, for example, that the summer that we're about to go into will still be quite strong and maybe not as strong in the latter part of the fiscal year. And so we do look at all of those inputs together and decide on the ultimate. We evaluate whether we think that a third party estimate is out of, you know, out of line with what we want to budget.
Thank you. Any mm-hmm. other questions before she proceeds?
And I've just received a message, I'm sorry, that that our city manager is online, and if AGP could bring him in, perhaps he could add some comments at the end of the presentation. That would be great. So the moving to the expenditure side, I'm going to start with the one-time expenditures because these are what's making the overall general fund expenditure budget higher than the overall revenue budget. So the one-time expenditures include $1.1 million transferred to the general fund emergency reserve. That will bring the general fund emergency reserve specifically up to the 33% of the most recent year adopted operating budget. And a couple of other transfers to reserves as well. These are all consistent with city reserve policies. We'll be transferring $0.3 million to the general fund vehicle replacement fund to comply with the reserve policy there of 20% of the value of the general fund fleet, and $0.1 million to the general fund compensable leave fund to make that fund balance equal to 30% of the liability for compensable leave in the last year's ACFR. And I'll talk a little bit more about those when I get to those funds. And then in addition this year, beyond the reserve contributions, the proposed budget includes a payoff of the USDA loan for the fire station, which is consistent with 2016 council direction. And that's using one-time sales proceeds that were received in fiscal year 21-22, as well as the Measure E and Q contribution, which has been reduced from $260,000 to $240,000. So you reviewed the proposed budget last time, and I had mentioned that we might lower that. We are going to lower that in the final version of the proposed budget. So $240,000 from Measure Q&E, and the remainder coming from the general fund from those sales proceeds. Finally, the general fund, the proposed budget includes a $0.8 million contribution to a pension trust consistent with the pension trust policy that council adopted in April, and this is to address the city's long-term pension liability. The citywide contribution will actually be $1.06 million, and that includes smaller contributions from the water, sewer, and harbor funds, and the general fund portion is $0.8 million. And as I mentioned, net of the one-time transfers, the general fund budget is $16.3 million, and that's an increase of 5.8% or $0.9 million from the prior year budget net of one-time expenditures and transfers. So this chart here depicts an overall year-over-year increase of 24.7%, but a lot of that is just going towards other funds and other reserves to improve the city's long-term fiscal sustainability position. This chart shows just the rough order of magnitude of how the general fund budget breaks down on the expenditure side by department. And this chart right here includes non-departmental, which is those one-time expenditures and interfund transfers. And so then I've shown it here, net of transfers, the percentages change a bit. And you can see that in the general fund, the largest department is the police department, followed by public works and then fire. Those are actually look to be exactly the same when you net out the transfers. And then all of the other departments are much smaller, with city council being the smallest. In terms of key changes in ongoing operating expenditures in the general fund, personnel costs, there's a number of factors to mention there. They're increasing by 11.6% from the prior year for a variety of reasons. And actually, this includes the one-time contribution to PERS, as well as the other factors, which will be ongoing. So we are adding one net new position to the general fund in the proposed budget. This includes adding two positions and taking away one position. So there's a proposed addition of a building inspector and code enforcement officer, in part to help run the short-term rental program and ensure adequate enforcement of that program, and also in part to keep up with the increased pace of building permit requests over the last few years. And then in the Public Works Department, the proposed budget includes adding a Public Works admin tech to help with financial administration, project administration, and a variety of administrative duties, and then eliminate the environmental programs manager position, which will be partially incorporated into other roles. And then there's also increased personnel costs in the general fund for part-time staffing, primarily in the recreation services division. That's really a reflection of them restoring services after COVID. So their budget is one that has definitely ebbed and flowed more than some of the other departments due to the pandemic. And then we do have a placeholder in the general fund for anticipated personnel cost increases, wage increases, and total compensation increases pending the outcome of labor negotiations. The city's in labor negotiations with all three of its bargaining units. And if those are completed before budget adoption, then we would incorporate the final numbers in budget adoption. If not, then we would come back to council with budget amendments for those. Also wanted to note that we've taken out the contributions to the OPEB trust for fiscal year 22-23 going forward, since that's now largely fully funded. And in talking with our financial advisors and our OPEB actuaries, the consensus is really to put all available resources for unfunded liabilities into the CalPERS unfunded liability, which, as you recall, is over $27 million in the last ACFR. So again, the 0.8 million contribution is what the general fund will make this year to that. Supplies and services across the board are really increasing by inflation, roughly at this point, from 7-8%. And so that's not really representing an increased level of service as much as it is representing an increased cost to provide existing services there. And then finally, this brings me to the general fund balance projections. This has changed a bit since the version that was in your packet, but I did want to provide you the updated fund balance numbers. What you see that's different is a committed fund balance piece, that little line in blue, which reflects the property sale proceeds that we received in 21-22. They're committed under a 2016 resolution, which is guiding the direction that we're including in the proposed budget. And then if the proposed budget is adopted, that fund balance portion goes away again next year, and that blue line for committed disappears. I do want to note that the general fund itself, the 001 fund exclusively, is going down significantly from 22 to 23. in terms of year-end fund balance projections. And a lot of that money is staying within the general fund in the other funds. So you'll see that when I go through the other fund balance projections. But a lot of those are just transfers from the 001 fund to the general fund emergency reserve, the vehicle replacement fund, et cetera. So I'll present a summary chart at the end where you can see the whole picture. I'll pause there and see if you have questions before I go into the smaller funds.
Yeah, I think one of the things I would benefit from just being newer to the process is being able to see how the general fund and the Q&E, you know, add together. And then when you look at the expenditures, what does that trend really look like over a couple of years? Because mm-hmm. a lot of the Q&E funds are being used for things like personnel and other. And I think that would paint a more complete picture. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if in your overall citywide budget, if there is a view that shows that level of information consolidated, because otherwise this looks like spending's really flat, but I think by the time you add Q&E into it, spending would actually be higher.
That's a great question. There are a number of different depictions in the proposed budget of citywide funds overall and discussion of citywide personnel factors and changes. So there's not a specific grouping of just measure Q&E and general fund, but that's certainly something we could consider for a future year.
Is this the time to comment on the general fund, or you wait till the whole item is finished?
I would go ahead and do that now.
Did anybody else have any comments? I understand the sales tax projections came from a third party. However, it is my personal opinion that the 9% increase may be aggressive. Just to follow up on Courtney's comment, if you add the sales tax in the general fund to the sales tax in Measure QE, the total is $7 million or represents 31% of their combined $22.4 million budget. Mm-hmm. And in the event of a mild recession that would start sometime in the winter, missing that number could be a problem. Another area where I think it might be aggressive are the fees for services. If the $711,000 fee that was collected by the Community Development Department in the city manager's January update, if that's correct, which I assume was the fee for the new hotel on Atascadero Road, maybe achieving the 4% increase over your projected number may be challenging, since I don't think there'll be another fee in that kind of magnitude in the future. Mm-hmm. And finally, I thought the projection for the property tax increase was light. Factoring inflation, Visit Morro Bay is planning for a decrease in occupancy, which I find surprising considering they're planning to spend over $1 million to promote the lodging industry. I'm pretty sure that the city council is going to give you rave reviews for your condensed general fund presentation. It's gone from 100, I looked it up, it's gone from 165 pages to 10. However, personally, I miss the opportunity to review some of the details. Things like showing in a column last year's actuals, the individual department line item budgets, the headcount comparisons, and the summary page of all the legal expenses, things of that nature. So it's just my personal opinion. I was also disappointed that this committee for the second year was not able to review the entire citywide budget. And hopefully next year, maybe we'll get a chance to do that. That's all I have, Courtney.
Can I provide a couple points of clarification?
Of course.
Thank you for your input about the revenue projections. I appreciate that. And we'll take that into consideration. I did want to clarify that the current fees for service is not projecting an increase on one-time development fees. That's the citywide number. So that's the average, looking at every line item, which we looked at in great detail. So we worked closely with the community development director, Scott Graham, to project development levels for next year. And so we have not built in the one-time fee revenue into that. So I just wanted to clarify that. And then I wanted to reassure the whole committee that all of the detail will absolutely be in the proposed budget. We actually just today, before we came, exported a print version of our digital budget book, which I'll go into in a bit. And it's still going to be over 500 pages. It will present all of the department line item detail. It will present all of the legal services, for example, and everything. It's just presented, we're presenting fund summaries and department summaries. And so that's consistent with GFOA awards checklist and best practices to present the budget by department, by fund, which the city's prior budgets, at least since Measure Q and E was funding operations, weren't able to do yet, and was something that the interim finance director also flagged as wanting to do. So the proposed citywide budget will include fund summaries for, I believe it's roughly 50 active funds, like you've seen for the 7 funds before you, as well as every department. And so the departmental summaries will include FTE lists. We've got a citywide FTE list that it shows changes from prior year to current year. And it will also show department by fund information. So for departments like the fire department that are funded now through both general fund and Q&E, for example, that information will be depicted more clearly under the new department summaries. So I completely agree. We would like to be able to do this faster if we could and get all of it to you sooner. That's one of the reasons we're hoping to bring you a budget in May next year instead of April, so that we don't bifurcate our efforts and take Q&E out of the equation exclusively. But that we're spending all of our limited staff hours available on putting together the proposed budget in its entirety and hoping to bring that to you in May. So I know that last year staff was in the same time crunch that we have found ourselves in now, especially with unfilled positions. And so, we absolutely hope that we're not in the same position going forward.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions or comments before we proceed?
I guess I'd reiterate what Homer's saying, that I know our responsibility is look at these items, but context is everything. So that in looking at, not just looking at the general fund items, but basically getting a roll-up of everything we're spending in the fire department or police department, that's the trend that I think the citizen wants to see, regardless kind of funding source. What does that look like over time? I also, in general on the revenue, it seems inconsistent to me that TOT would be going up differently than sales taxes. TOT, hotel rooms create sales taxes, and the sales tax increase and the property tax that I'm taking, they just don't kind of make sense. Some of our merchants had their best year ever last year. So I guess I'd reiterate what the chairwoman said, is that even though we may have received the property tax information from the county, they probably didn't account for the fact that we're selling a piece of property. It's coming off the city ownership, which is tax exempt, and going into private ownership. So some reality check or background information is really helpful. We're kind of an analytic bunch up here, and probably want to see the footnotes as well as the summary. So I know it's a challenge for staff often to say, well, this is kind of the tip of the iceberg, but I think we want to see a little bit below the waterline too.
Okay.
Yeah, I was just going to comment on the TOT. Are you hearing me okay?
No.
Didn't.
Green light up.
Yep.
Okay.
There. Okay. Yeah. It woke up again. On the TOT, the way I would think about modeling that or trying to have them model that, I'll get closer. There you go. Is kind of a rate and volume, you know, what's the volume of rooms compared to, you know, in that projection compared to prior years, and then what's the rate too? Because if the rates are, you know, on an average night are going up, you know, 2 or 5% or whatever that is, both of those things combined would inform you on, you know, what those revenues should look like. So yeah, it, and then also factoring in, you know, as part of the volume, what are the new rooms coming online, and you know, how many nights are those going to be available during the fiscal year? And I would think that Hampton Inn would be, you know, booking rooms before the end of the fiscal year, but maybe they're just being conservative in that outline now.
Mm-hmm. Great. And I don't know if our if our city manager has been able to be patched in. If he's on, he may be able to provide more insight into Visit Morro Bay's outlook, since he's on their board. Mr. Collins,
yeah, okay. Yeah, can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
All right, sorry. My son's also in the living room with here, so you might hear some background noise. What the chair just expressed as far as how to derive a forecast is essentially the exact way that Visit SoCal, the county T-bid, as well as Visit Morro Bay, our local T-bid, tries to derive their, you know, best guess for next year. Obviously, this is a very tumultuous period in time, and we probably experienced across the state of California, at least in the Central Coast region, one of our best tourist years ever, which was not anticipated. And we continue to see visitation levels that are breaking previous months' records by 20% to 30%. There is an anticipation that that pace will slow down, and so really the guesswork is in when that's going to happen. And I think there was a CFAC member who talked about the $1 million being proposed to be spent for marketing, and that certainly will go into effect to help try to counteract a slowdown, if you will. Of course, all the other DMOs in the state are going to be doing the exact same thing. So we're trying to obviously do what we can to differentiate ourselves from other tourist destinations. We've factored in as best we could the price of gas going up. And oftentimes that helps benefit drive markets, ironically enough, because the same gas pressures are felt even more substantially with the airlines. So looking sort of at a potential slowdown, if you will, or a plateauing in the winter time, but most of our biggest earning months are in the summer, and so the summer is projected to be really strong. So I think we're doing a little bit of hedging with our TOT number to try to find a happy medium. And I know Sarah's probably could explain a little bit more on the sales tax, how that number may be a little different than TOT.
Great, thanks, Mr. Collins. Yeah, on the sales tax, I just recently had my quarterly meeting with HDL, which also includes our community development director, so we talk about development trends as well and look at the whole picture. And we absolutely dug into those assumptions and really tried to kind of stress test their model, because 9%, you know, I can see why you would think it would be aggressive. They have sector-based outlooks, which I am going to start posting online on the city's website, so I'll let you know when those are available. They have statewide projections, and then they've got very specific quarterly projections for Morro Bay. So, you know, there is a trade-off, I think, committee member Peck asked a question last time, you know, that the city used to take 50% of their projection, and you then we're under estimating. And so there is, you know, a trade-off in whether we put in an overly conservative number or a number that's closer to 100% of their sales tax estimate, because we don't want to leave, in this case, it is a very large number between the general fund and Measure Q&E, and we don't want to significantly underestimate either, given that we have all of these capital needs that we want to start moving forward on, and we have robust reserves, so that if we were to have a few months in the last part of the fiscal year where we do start to see a recession, Of course, that's not what we're all hoping for, but we would have, as I'll show you in a moment, very significant reserves if needed. But you know, HDL is really taking that potential recession and the end of the fiscal year into account in those 9% projections already. So that's why we left that that projection in there.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Would you like me to continue?
Sure.
Okay,
thank
great.
You.
So for the next fund, we've got the General Fund Compensable Leave Fund. This is the 05 fund. And this fund tracks funds that are set aside to partially address a city's liability that's associated with leave time that employees earn and are eligible to receive in payouts, really, while they're employed to a lesser degree, but it's larger payouts that happen upon separation from the city for vacation time, et cetera, that they've not used. So our city reserve policy calls for this fund balance to be at 30% of the liability in the prior fiscal year. And this year that requires a transfer in from the primary general fund of $81,000. So this fund just really transfers money back and forth from the primary general fund to this fund. Theoretically, it could be tracked in a committed fund balance of the general fund if we wanted to continue consolidating funds, but for now, it's in a separate fund. So the fund balance chart here just shows the fund balance increasing by $81,000 from the current fiscal year to the next fiscal year to reach that 30% threshold. The General Vehicle Replacement Fund is relatively similar, but has some differences. This accumulates funds to replace vehicles that are used by the general funds departments, and the reserve policy calls for this to be set, the fund balance to be 20% of the value of the general funds fleet. So that requires a $270,000 transfer in from the general fund this year. And in prior years, and looking at prior year data, the city just hasn't been able to transfer in enough funds to meet the reserve policy for each of these individual funds. And this year, unfortunately, there is enough funding available to do that. So we are bringing all of these funds into compliance with the reserve policy. This fund also got a one-time insurance proceed in the current fiscal year of about $30,000 for a police vehicle that was damaged in an accident. And I mentioned that because we're going to replace that police vehicle out of this fund, or we're proposing to, in the next fiscal year. And so the insurance proceeds will offset that cost somewhat. The second vehicle that we're proposing to spend out of this, or to buy out of this fund, is the consolidated maintenance truck, which was actually budgeted this year. Our public works director would like to wait and purchase an electric vehicle as more of those come on the market. So we're adding a little bit to that budget and keeping that in the budget for next year in the proposed budget.
Just one question. It's not mm-hmm. particularly important. I'm just curious. On where it says the reserve policy is 20% of the value of the general fund's fleet, is that if you were going to replace everything like new, or is that a depreciated value?
It is from our depreciation list. So I would have to look back at that data. I don't know if our finance manager would probably know the answer to that. But it is likely the current year value, so it would be a partially depreciated value.
Okay.
So you never get to 100%, do you?
Yeah. And if, as the fleet gets older and more depreciated, then the funds there to replace it would probably be a little light, right?
Yeah, that's something we could consider in maybe the council's next update of the reserve policy, is to better define that. Mm-hmm. Good question. So we would end up with a fund balance at fiscal year 22-23 year end of $720,000. So still a good chunk to replace a number of vehicles if needed. And I don't know that there's ever been a year that the city has spent that much on vehicle replacement, but yeah, I think it's, you know, to have that there in case there were several accidents or unexpected circumstances.
Do you include all the rolling stock?
No, this is just the vehicle, it would be everything that's on our vehicle replacement schedule. So without having that in front of me, my understanding is it is primarily vehicles. It may include some smaller equipment like tractors or lawnmowers that would still have to be capitalized.
Well, you know, the reason I ask is, you know, there are some pieces of the rolling stock that, you know, are very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, several years ago, Measure Q had to buy a skid steer for Public Works that was $650,000. And I think that the collection department uses a truck. Just bought a brand new truck to clean sewers out that was $700,000 and things of that nature.
Great, great clarifying questions. I'll make note of those. Thank you. Okay. Moving on to the General Fund Emergency Reserve Fund. The reserve policy calls for this to be funded at 33% to 50% of the most recent year's adopted operating budget. And so 33% is the minimum reserve policy and 50% is the target. This is where Measure Q&E doesn't have its own reserve policy, and so we lump it into this reserve calculation with the general fund, and so that the number ends up being a pretty high number. So to bring the 051 GFER fund up to 30% on its own this year, up to 33%, it requires a contribution of $1.1 million from the general fund. But I do want to mention that when we do the forecast and we actually calculate the fund balance in the 51 fund plus any unassigned fund balance in the general fund gets counted towards the total general fund emergency reserve balance, because those funds in the general fund are also available. So that's how the policy has been written. So this year, what the proposed budget is showing is a $1.1 million revenue from the general fund proper into the general fund emergency reserve fund. Theoretically, if we did want to continue to reduce our interfund transfers, this would be another one that could be tracked as a committed fund balance in the general fund, but for now it's a separate fund. So in so doing, the projected fund balance at the end of the budget year would be $5.4 million. And you'll see the total fund balances later will add up to be much higher than 33% of the operating budget.
Suggestion?
Mm-hmm.
In addition to 33%, for those folks in the community that don't do math well, you might want to say this is 4 months of operating expenses, which I think people do understand.
Mm-hmm. Good suggestion. Thank you.
And without this year's proposed contribution, Sarah, where are we now? Are we at or above the previous 25%, and we're making an additional contribution to get to the new council policy of 33%?
Yeah, it's a little bit confusing because we look at both funds. So when I did the fund forecast in February, those numbers showed that we were at about 40% of operating budget between the balance in the general fund emergency reserve fund and the unassigned balance in the general fund. So I'll be doing an updated five-year forecast that will update that number before budget adoption. But between the two of them, it would include this 5.4 plus 1.5 million in the general fund. And so that would probably be within that same range still.
So if you take the 5.4 million, I fell asleep again. There it goes. Okay. It makes me not want to turn it off. So 5.4 million, if that's a third of it, then you're talking about like 16.2 million as the operating budget.
Yeah.
But
so
that
actually
sounds low, especially mm-hmm. if you consider Q&E.
It's actually the most recent adopted budget. So the historic has been to take the prior year adopted budget and catch up to that in the next year. So that's what we're doing. But it looks like they're turning the mics up, but we'll actually be well above that with a $1.5 million unassigned fund balance in the general fund.
Okay.
So Okay, we're almost at the end. The general fund facility maintenance fund is, it tracks a portion of funds that are available for the maintenance of city facilities, but I did just want to note that the general fund proper also includes a facilities maintenance budget. And on the revenue side, this fund brings in revenues from some of the city's lease revenues, specifically 781 Market Avenue. But there are also other lease revenues in the general fund proper. So this is a fund that just has been set up historically, and the reserve policy calls for a balance of $50,000 to $75,000 in this fund. That's not really a significant amount to maintain the city facilities. And so this is another fund that we could consolidate with the general fund in the future. But we're trying to incrementally consolidate funds. And this year we're tackling the accumulation funds and the equipment replacement funds. And so this year we're proposing to spend the $38,000 of lease revenue on a maintenance in this building, the Veterans Memorial kitchen. That is that fund, and that would leave us with the fund balance remaining of $68,000, which would be within the range of the reserve policy as well.
And this particular fund would fund the major improvements of this building and the community center and what else?
Any city facility, the way it's written.
Sounds like petty cash compared to what your needs really are.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm.
Has the city had anyone come in and do kind of a reserve study on, you know, what your real long-term expenditures look like and the replacement costs and things like that, and, you know, including, you know, for streets and what that is? Homer, always the...
Others in the room and on the call may know more than I do about the history. The pieces that I know are... that there was a management partners study that was comprehensive in 2015 that looked at all of the fund balances. And I don't believe that it went into all of the individual reserve policies. And City Council had a subcommittee that did review the... Yeah. Thank you, Mayor. that did review the reserve policies last year, but to my knowledge, that wasn't based on, an in-depth analysis of our asset value. I think the CIP assessments that are proposed in the fiscal year 22-23 budget, I just feel like nobody can hear me online though. Those will give us a better sense of our facilities replacement costs and may be able to inform future reserve policy updates.
Maybe we spend some of this money on a new sound system.
We're having fun with it today, and mine's dead again too.
Okay, sorry about that. I'll just keep going without it. Okay, capital accumulation fund was set up to try to address unfunded capital needs. It looks like this was set up in 15-16 with City Hall specifically mentioned. There's not a reserve policy in place for this. I think they were waiting also for those CIP needs assessments to better inform what that reserve policy could potentially look like. For this year, we're not passing any funds through this accumulation fund. We're transferring money directly from the general fund into, we're proposing to transfer about $500,000 in CIP contributions, as you saw, from the general fund to the general government CIP fund. So this is another one that could be tracked as a committed fund balance instead of a separate fund, because it would just end up creating duplicate transfers in the transfer budget. So the fund balance will actually increase significantly because we are consolidating the 470 fund, which is a project accumulation fund that I'll show you in a second, with this fund. So at least we're consolidating those two because they were both saving money for large dollar amount projects accumulations. And so the fund balance collectively will end up being 617, bless you, at the end of fiscal year 22-23. So as I mentioned, this 470 fund, there's not really a whole lot to say other than we're consolidating this with the 460 fund. And so the fund balance will be transferred there pending council approval of year-end budget amendments at the end of the current fiscal year. And then we get to the summary. So the general fund fund balance summary is here before you. You can see that we are projecting, so we had a fund balance of $10.3 million across all of these funds in 2021. That includes non-spendable, committed, and unassigned fund balance per GASB's fund balance classifications. And in the current fiscal year, we're projecting that number to increase significantly to $13.7 million. And part of that is the $798,000 property sales proceeds there that comes into the general fund as a committed revenue and then goes back out again in 22-23 if the council approves payoff of that loan as part of the adopted budget. So the fund balance would decrease to about $11.8 million. So that the other reduction there is the $0.8 million contribution to the pension reserve. As you can see, though, a lot of that fund balance actually stays within some of the other funds and increases. So it just moves out of the 01 fund and into the 051 general fund emergency reserve fund, for example, and some of the smaller funds. What that looks like for a reserve levels overall is total general fund and related fund reserves of about $8.6 million at the end of fiscal year 22-23. So even though it's parsed up into all of these individual funds and individual reserve policies, council would have the discretion to allocate these reserves for any purpose. None of them are legally restricted. So overall, the reserve balance is quite healthy. And then I just will very briefly show you. We have a new digital budget book platform that we'll be making live hopefully later this evening. We're really excited about it because it does have all the detailed information. But for members of the public that just want to see a certain fund or a certain department, they don't necessarily have to print and wade through a 600 and some page document. They can access a fund summary menu here and just look at specific funds in a drop-down list. They can do the same for the departments, and this is where the line item detail and the staffing detail will be for each department. They can look at our capital budget, which will also go live tonight, and we are proposing a robust CIP plan for fiscal year 22-23, and members of the public or council or committee members will still also be able to get a print version of this if they would like. It's a printable PDF. In my opinion, it's really optimized for web viewing, but it is certainly still possible to get a nice print PDF of this. So we're excited about this. It also has a transparency module that I can tell you about at one of your future agenda item discussions. And just wanted to mention that. So we're excited to make that live. And hopefully now that we're doing it that way, we will be able to streamline some of our budget preparation in future years and show you the whole contextual picture at your future May meetings. So the key question for CFAC, and I just want to remind you, we haven't yet taken public comment, I'm sure the chair remembers that, is does CFAC have any input or feedback on the proposed general fund and related funds budgets for council consideration? And that concludes I should actually ask Mr. Collins, now that he's tied into the meeting though, if he would like to add any additional comments.
Sure, be happy to give a brief rundown, which you all see in the budget, and it goes live this evening. But just wanted to say thank you to the CFAC team for your continued dedication to our community. And really appreciate your review today, as well as the work that you did on Measure EQ earlier this year. Our Public Works Advisory Board will be looking at our CIPs tomorrow, and the Harbor Advisory Board did look at the Harbor budget, generally speaking. So just in terms of some of the broad themes that you probably have already picked up on this evening, you know, we are experiencing recovery from COVID, pretty rapid recovery. And a lot of it has to do with our community. Thankfully, stepped up to the bat with regard to Measure E. It came in huge for us. And I think, and Sarah and I talking, I think it equates to about 25% of the city's general fund at this point in time, which is a massive increase over what Measure Q was, and provides a lot of flexibility for us to address some of our staffing needs and also some of our CIP needs. With all that being said, and you know, it's already been brought up by a few of you, we do have headwinds that we're facing with global supply challenges, inflation rates rising, the war in Europe not helping any of that, and COVID-19 once again impacting Asia, which could ripple through all those other issues. And the pandemic has taught us a lot about being prepared for emergencies and slowdowns, and fiscal prudency is sort of warranted, and it's kind of resounds throughout the budget. We're excited to be able to, all that being said, to be able to fund the big three, which we're considering our operations staffing as one, the CIPs as two, and then ultimately our pension liabilities. We're excited that we're fully funded and actually being able to enhance our funding above pre-pandemic levels. But we're also facing what all the other organizations around here and in our state and the country around the great resignation or revaluation or whatever the word may be, but it's hard to hold on to talent, and it's hard to attract talent. And so this budget does have money set aside for compensation increases, a class and comp study to make sure we're appropriately situated within our market, training and team building. We have an org assessment that's been put into the budget to help us understand how we are equipped and aligned with the rapidly changing times we're in. COVID has just accelerated all of the trends that were in play, and we need to be able to catch up with that and understand if we're staffed appropriately to take advantage of innovation opportunities. This budget invests $18.7 million into CIPs to include the Wharf Project, water and sewer projects, our roads, climate action, ADA in our harbor. But more funding and planning is needed. That's why we set aside money to do assessments for our harbor and other CIPs. There's significant money available at the federal level through the bipartisan infrastructure law. At the state level, the governor just revised his budget expectations, and I believe there's a $90 billion surplus. Not all of that can be spent. Of course, there's GAN limits and other things like that, but their total budget's projected to be $300 billion this year, which was the size of the federal budget about 20 years ago. So there's certainly opportunities for local governments to take advantage of funding for infrastructure. And we're pleased that we're able to staff our engineering section enough to be able to deliver on some of these projects. It's been a real challenge over the last 4 to 5 years. And the pension liabilities that have been discussed are significant, and we are able to invest in a 115 trust fund, and they'll be discussed a little bit later this evening about how we go about selecting a firm to help us with that. But fiscal prudence does rule the day, and that's why we're pleased that we have strong reserve levels that could prepare us for the next emergency and also the potential for a slowdown. As I mentioned earlier, I think Morro Bay is positioned well to address a slowdown, both from a tourism standpoint, but also because we have these healthy reserves that City Council has been working really hard to pull together over the last 5 to 10 years. But I really do want to say thank you to CFAC and also to Sarah Johnson-Rios as the leader of the Administrative Services Department for pulling all this together alongside Kelly Matos during very challenging times with 100% turnover. It's been really challenging for everyone, but they've been able to lead the city team in pulling together this budget and surmounting those challenges. And it's been a real pleasure working with them and all the departments to partner to get this done, and really appreciate the input that we'll receive from CFAC tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any public comment?
AGP, do we have any public comment on the phone? And I'm also told that the video feed may not be going through live.
Thank you, Chair. There is no public comments in the queue, and we are broadcasting live with no issue.
Okay. So the recommendation here is that we move that we've received the draft proposed budget for the general fund and six associated funds and provide input. So I think we've provided a little bit of an input along the way here. Is there any final comments that anyone would like to make? All right. So I'll put forth a motion that we accept the draft proposed general fund and six associated fund budgets. Do I have a second? Okay. A second. All in favor?
And Ms. Mattis can do a roll call vote.
To your motion?
Yes. Adding with comments, with our comments.
Chair Shepler?
Aye.
Vice Chair Peck?
Yes.
Committee Member Alexander?
Yes.
And Committee Member Woody?
Yes.
Okay. Passes 4-0.
Thank you. Our next item is appointment of a CFAC liaison for the pension trust selection. Would you like to give that update, Sarah?
Sure. I actually was going to keep this one very brief because I know you have a couple more business items. I don't have a slide presentation, but just a brief update, as was provided in your staff report, that this is a council goal to address the unfunded pension liability. CFAC reviewed policy options in December. Council reviewed policy options in January, and council requested that we bring back a pension reserve policy to them before actually taking an action to form a Section 115 trust. We did that in April, and council approved a pension reserve policy trust and gave us direction to go ahead and form a 115 pension trust and to include $1.06 million in the proposed budget as contributions consistent with the newly adopted pension reserve policy. We would, as we told council in April, we would re-engage NHA advisors who helps cities form these and helps cities vet the various providers of these trusts. And we know this is a high interest item for both council and CFAC. So we actually have a council subcommittee that's been assigned to this, Mayor Hedding and Councilmember Barton. And then we would like to have one CFAC liaison also participate in this selection committee to select a vendor, essentially a company to start a 115 trust with. After that, then we would come back to council with formation documents to go ahead and form that and send the funds over. And at that time, I know there's been questions about this from CFAC, at that time we would get council to approve an investment portfolio among the options that would be provided by the provider, because each provider has slightly different portfolio options with different risk tolerances. So that would be a decision that council would make upon formation. So the item before you tonight is to select a CFAC liaison to participate.
Okay. Should we ask for public comment before we discuss amongst ourselves? Okay. Do we have any public comment?
Thank you, Chair. We have no raised hands in the queue.
Thank you. Are there any CFAC members that would like to volunteer for this?
Yeah, I would.
Committee?
I've had quite a bit of experience with professional advisors, financial advisors, and I've been the treasurer of three San Luis Obispo County nonprofits, all of which had funds, all endowed funds, and all of which were managed professionally. So I've got some little bit of knowledge how that all works, but that's just... I'm not. Courtney?
I was willing to sign up as well, but I'm happy to let you take it. It would be a learning for me. I've done private industry pension, but not municipal.
My focus is more on the investment, just picking the money manager.
Sounds good. Mr. Woody?
I've had a lot of years working for CalPERS on different projects in the past municipal government, but honestly, I really don't have time to do it right now. And I think you're an outstanding candidate for it. I think you do a great job. I think you'll love doing it.
Very good. Well, then I would put forth a motion that we nominate Mr. Alexander to be the CFAC representative on the 115 trust provider.
I'll second that.
All right.
Okay, and I'll provide your roll call vote. Chair Shepler?
Aye.
Vice Chair Peck?
Yes.
Member Alexander?
Yes.
And Member Woody?
Yes.
Motion carries 4-0.
Okay, the next topic on the agenda is the informational update on City Council's changes to the advisory body bylaws. Was that going to be you or Scott?
It's going to be Scott if we still have him with us.
Okay. You do. Thank you very much. This is Scott Collins, City Manager for Morro Bay. I'm just going to give a brief presentation on the staff report updating regarding the City Council's changes to the Advisory Board Handbook bylaws, which was briefly discussed at the CFAC special meeting a couple weeks ago. By way of background, the City Council appointed subcommittee members of Mayor Heading and Mayor Pro Tem Barton to form a subcommittee to conduct the biannual review of the City Council policies and procedures and advisory board body handbook and bylaws. Something had been done a couple times in the last 4 years, and it was up for review. So as part of the overall update, council made several clarifications for all advisory boards. And the major ones were around the advisory board work plans and meeting absences. As it relates to advisory body work plans, to ensure that the bodies are assisting the council on key issues of community concern. The council and each advisory board establishes a work plan. The work plan derives from the overarching city council goals and action items approved by council every 2 years. The council seeks input from those advisory bodies, the five bodies that serve the council, as well as surveys and other forums to get input from the community. That informs the council's setting of their goals and then the action items, which are the actual work plan to help achieve those goals. And then once those are established, then the advisory boards are informed as to what specific topics they'll be working on for that given year. Of course, as we've learned with the pandemic, you can't always predict what's going to come, and sometimes needs emerge rather urgently that may not necessarily coincide with the city council's adopted work plans. And so there is the opportunity with the future agenda items to raise new issues as a matter of course of business. And that's all well and good, but there is a bit of rigor added to it this time around, that if advisory board body does desire to add an item to its work plan, that the scope must be defined in a motion and receive support by a majority of the advisory board members. And city staff will evaluate the required time, resources, and impacts on in relation to council-approved goals and work plans, then present that request and analysis to city council for consideration and approval. Likewise, if it desires to change its meeting times, dates, locations, et cetera, would do follow the same process. The other major change that affects all advisory boards is around meeting absences, and I won't read through that because it is a bit much there, but you basically just want to make sure you don't miss more than 25% of unexcused absences related to your 25% of a given year's meetings for the bodies. Now, as it relates to CFAC specifically, as we discussed again briefly during the last CFAC special meeting, council did make changes to the roles and purposes of CFAC, and really relating to the what we just discussed, which is the significant increase in overall money for Measure E and Q. Hold on, my dog is barking. That adds a lot of complexity and interplay with the general fund budget compared to previous years, where the Measure Q revenues were essentially the same year after year, about $1 million, and the same types of things were funded year after year. Adding to that, another $3 million essentially has a lot more interplay with the city's general fund, and thus a lot more complexity and need for review. So that taken into consideration with reviewing some of Government Finance Officers Association, or GFOA's best practices, related to the audit and, you know, where that really belongs in terms of review and looking at some of the other things that CFAC has traditionally done. The council felt it is warranted to really kind of boost CFAC's work plan towards higher level strategic financial initiatives. And with that in mind, the WRF quarterly report was typically reviewed by CFAC and not the Public Works Advisory Board team. And that created some confusion because that also had some quarterly report also had some technical components that weren't really lending itself well to CFAC's expertise. And so council felt it was more appropriate to bring that quarterly report that had more of the technical side to the Public Works Advisory Board. And that would leave more time for CFAC to review more of the higher level strategic initiatives related to the WRF, such as, you know, use of cash and maximizing use of funds and understanding the interplay between that and our WIFIA and SRF funding for the WRF project. So really just trying to stay high level and strategic was the overall impetus for those changes. And so with that in mind, the CFAC meetings would be as followed, having January, February, and May focused on Measure QE and the responsibilities of that committee related to the tax measures of Measure Q&E, and ultimately looking at the overall city budget in May. And then having August and October be the more finance-related city council priority items related back to that work plan. We know in the past we'd heard some concerns that some of these major initiatives would be brought to CFAC alongside a Measure E or Measure Q item, and oftentimes not have a lot of time to prepare and really think through the issues and really need an answer on the spot, and sort of felt that way. So knowing that we'll have several months to prepare for those priority items, I think will lead to more robust discussion and CFAC feeling like they're not being rushed. At least that's the goal of going this approach. So council did approve this change to CFAC, as well as all the other changes at advisory boards and the overall advisory board handbook last month. And so we felt it was important to share this. Again, the focus being the complexity of Measure E changing the overall dynamic for CFAC, and also wanting to focus on at least one or two major city council work plan items in the second half of the year. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, and Sarah could as well. Thank you.
Thank you. So my question is there anything else when you think about your overall annual process? Does this schedule make sense at this point? Do you think by next May, when CFAC is meeting, that we would have the whole budget to look at and not just the general fund?
That's our hope. It's a really good question. I think the last 2 years have been quite unanticipated and remarkable in terms of just the amount of change at the staff level. We hope we have all the pieces in place where folks are supported and want to stay here and all that good stuff, and so putting some good practices into place in case there is turnover in the future. But we think by moving the schedule from April out to May gives us a more time to ramp up. We can also look at the back end in terms of when we present our mid-year budget, because that also creates crunch on the other end of the spectrum. So this definitely gives us a much better opportunity to deliver a full budget to CFAC.
Okay, thank you. And then for the topics later this year in August and October, what is the thinking on when City Council will have ideas for what the content and focus and scope of those meetings would be?
Yeah, we're looking at that right now, and what I think would be appropriate given where we are with our WRF project. It would probably be an update on the WRF financing, kind of a global update, and seeking input from CFAC, and probably as we get down the line this year, probably an update on the pension trust formation. I mean, you do have a member of your team now with Mr. Alexander serving on that selection panel, but there ultimately will land somebody, so that would probably be another opportunity to to bring that to CFAC for discussion. Those are at least a couple of the items we're considering right now.
Thank you. Other committee members, do you have any questions or comments?
I had a comment and an observation. I observed that with the new, we have five meetings this year and on an ongoing basis. That means if we miss more than one meeting, we basically abandon the position. So perhaps I'm not, every other committee meets monthly, so they have three absences they can make for us in a limited number here. We may need to encourage the council to reconsider that. My other observation is that I'm excited about the new strategic view as long as sort of that's an ongoing thing and that we're not simply getting the capital facilities report in August or October for comment before it goes to council. I would hope that this committee would be involved in that strategy on an ongoing basis, selecting the consultant, reviewing their preliminary findings. So then when we see it, it isn't simply the final report. It looks kind of familiar, and we understand it. I know they're, at least in Homer's case, Homer has been working on this for a very long time and has lots to contribute. So I hope we'll be involved throughout those processes and not simply at the end, as I think I'm reading the write-up here. So that'd be my only request.
Yes, that makes sense. And again, that I think that's the intent, is to have, be able to have a robust discussion and not bring something that's, you know, complete and final. We certainly have learned that there's a lot of expertise on CFAC and have utilized those individuals either as a total board or serving on panels to hire folks or look at financial policies and the like. So it's certainly kind of how we're looking at moving forward.
Okay, any other questions or comments from committee?
Only one. There's a couple tables and a figure and Appendix C in the WRF Q3 report that's going to be presented to PWIB tomorrow night. And those few things deal with the new handbook's guidelines for our responsibility. And I was just hoping that maybe that could make our August agenda.
Can I ask for clarifying information about what specifically you'd like to have on the August agenda? Which part of the WRF? There's specific tables you mentioned?
Well, assuming that I'm interpreting the instructions correctly that the City Council gave, tables 1, 3, and 4, figure 1, and Appendix C. And you may disagree.
Member Alexander, is that sort of the focus on the financing component of the project?
That specifically refers to review the debt service recommendations from staff, including use of cash and other funding sources, and analysis of impacts on rates. Review cash flow performances to ensure we maximize the use of funds. And 3, monitor compliance with drawdowns from WIFIA and SRF.
Yes, I agree. That's the scope. I was just asking, are those tables are relevant to that scope? Is what I was, sorry, was what I was trying to say.
Yeah, I believe those tables, you may disagree, I believe those tables refer to those three, at least one of those three things, or all of them.
Okay. Yeah, as I said earlier, I think the WRF financing update would be one of those two meetings, and those, the information from those tables, we'll look at those closely, but I going off memory, I think those would serve that discussion well.
Okay, thank you. Do we need to make a motion here to accept that we've received the informational update? Doesn't feel like much of an action item.
I think typically we like to have a roll call vote on each business item just so that we check, include that in your minutes.
Okay, then we'll be quick. I'll make a motion that we have received the informational update. Do I have a second?
I'll do that.
All right.
Open for roll. Chair Shepler?
Yes.
Vice Chair Peck?
Yes.
Committee Member Alexander?
Yes.
And Committee Member Woody?
Yes.
Okay. Next on our agenda is consideration of potential new work plan item on budget and brief communications. And I know you talked about this, Sarah, a little bit before with the new website, but I'll let you tee this up.
Great. Thank you, Chair. And I hope this is showing correctly on the Zoom feed. So just a brief set of slides for you here on this one. And this is in response to committee requests last time that we look at budget and brief communications. And so we want to ensure that, as Mr. Collins described, we're going through the advisory body process. If there's a specific new work plan item that we would take to council and evaluate. But because we're already doing some budget and brief, or we're planning to do some budget and brief efforts on the staff level, I wanted to share that with you as well and see where you ultimately land. So the recommendation would be to consider making a motion, if you would like to, that would define the scope of a potential new work plan item on budget and brief communications and ask staff to evaluate the required time, resources, and impacts on in relation to council approved goals. Present that request to council for consideration and approval. So this is language from the bylaws. So in your agenda packet was the 2019-20 budget and brief document that CFAC helped develop a few years ago. It was a trifold print brochure that, in my understanding, was printed and placed in City Hall and also put online for viewing. So this was the one side of it, and then the other side is here. We did some preliminary research on what it would cost to insert something like this in utility bills. We don't have a specific price quote yet because we haven't done a similar color brochure, trifolded, et cetera. But the preliminary estimate was that it could cost several thousand dollars to put these in utility bills if we wanted to do something in a similar color trifold brochure, double-sided format. Certainly, if this were requested to be a new work plan item, CFAC's assistance would be appreciated. And we would anticipate that staff would still need to coordinate with CFAC on this and obviously coordinate to get it in the utility bills and get it distributed. Just as a point of information, I wanted to also share with you the transparency module that we're evaluating. This is part of the ClearGov budget platform that we've already subscribed to. So there's no additional cost to this transparency component of that platform. They actually have, if the city chooses to turn this transparency platform on, you have your budget book on one URL, and then you have your transparency module on another URL, where members of the public get a brief overview of the demographics of Morro Bay, which comes from the census data and is auto-populated. And then they also get brief snapshots or very detailed snapshots, if they would like them, of your financials, which are pulled from your budget book data. So this would be something that could be updated each year as our budgets are updated. And we have some work to do to review the data that's on this portal still. So we would do that after budget adoption and ensure that all the numbers are tying, of course, and that everything is presented clearly. And then I did just want to include some screenshots here, though. So what you're seeing is screenshots of what it would potentially look like if we turned it on. So the overview section of this actually does have a lot of the same content that was in the budget and brief brochure and slightly different, you know, visual formats. But for example, this would be the citywide proposed revenue budget and proposed expenditure budget, and the historical data about city expenditures and revenues as well. And then for those members of the public that wanted to drill down into details, there's an expenditure tab and a revenue tab where they could view things very high level. In this case, the snapshot is showing all general fund expenditures by department, or they could go into great detail. So in this case, it's showing administrative services, departmental budget, breaking that out by personnel, services, and supplies, for example. So you can drill down relatively far in this, and you can actually, interestingly, have some greater functionality than in the budget module, where you can turn on and off certain things and only look at pieces of the pie, so to speak. So it has a lot of great functionality. Like I said, we're still evaluating the data, but we hope to be able to use this, and especially given that there would be no additional cost. So wanted you to be updated on that. And with that, that's all I have for you. It would just be up to your discussion on whether you want to recommend an additional work plan item.
Is this functionality available on the website currently, or it's behind the scenes right now?
It's behind the scenes right now, but I mean, it would be something that we would be evaluating either way after budget adoption, and we have a little bit more staff time to turn to that, and that's when we would typically do a budget and brief communications at that point anyway.
I'm tempted to ask that we continue this to the August meeting after the budget's been adopted, and then we can do a deeper dive.
Can I make some comments?
Sure.
There are two reasons I brought this forward at the last meeting. As I mentioned, I have recently talked to 700 or 800 Morro Bay residents who don't have any understanding of the city's financial structure. And the second reason is, according to our new handbook, and I'm quoting, the committee's role is to help promote citizen participation with an understanding of governmental financial information and processes. Also, I did not plan on the staff being involved in the creation of this actual document itself. I thought that it would just be presented to the committee, and if it approved, then it would be given to staff who would proofread it, and then basically budget to have it printed and put it, assuming the city council approved. While I think the city's new alternative sounds terrific, and I'm looking forward to seeing how it all works, I just want to note that I believe that other than the parents who use the city's website to sign up for recreational activities for their kids, I'm not sure the average Morro Bay citizen has ever a need to look at the city's website. Anyway, all that being said, because the way the staff report is worded, I don't sense that a four-color trifold mailed to each house would receive a positive recommendation when presented to the city council. So I suggest that we drop this and move on to future agenda items.
Any other comments?
I like this, and I've used it before in other capacities. I would note also that our population probably is older than the average and probably has difficulty resetting their VCR clocks like the rest of us do. That being said, I'm more excited about kind of the intense user being able to drill down. I'd rather have the staff spend their time and money on the creating more transparency in the website. But know that what Homer's saying is correct, is that people get lost. It's too often just an accounting exercise in their minds. They don't understand multi-fund accounting. And I would say that there needs to be something that this committee does with the staff to remedy that.
So I would propose that we revisit this and bring it back for our August meeting, and perhaps at that time you've either turned on the functionality where we can look at something on the website, or you've got some additional recommendations. But I do think there's an opportunity here, and you know exactly how it needs to come together. I'm not sure yet. I think this document that was put together by the previous committee was very helpful, and I, you know, for a couple of thousand dollars to include it in a mailer doesn't sound like that big a deal, and you know, especially as confused as people do get about finances, if that helps cut through some of the noise that city staff experience or even council members, just by helping paint a clearer picture for people, then I think, you know, it would probably be worth a couple of thousand dollars of value. But let's continue this in August and see where we're at. Mr. Woody?
There's a pretty good chance that the individual that did all the work on this still has the files, which would make it very easy to update it, the Word and Excel files. He's out of town, so when he gets back, he was going to check and see. Again, I didn't anticipate your department being involved at all.
Mr. Witte.
Thanks so much. Just a couple items real quick. One, I don't own a VCR, so I suppose there is a way to reset one sometime. Number two, when this comes back on our agenda for next time, could you, staff take the time to include for us a listing of all the ways that our budget is available to the public, whether it be out in our libraries, whether it be on available at the clerk's office for free? And also, could you provide for us statistics on the number of people who visit your website or our website and download these PDF documents, budgetary documents, and whatnot, so we can take a good look and say, okay, you know, maybe we're getting 20 people a day, 200 people a month, 200 people a week, so we can actually see how many people we are physically reaching with our efforts right now, because I think that's going to be really important in this discussion, that we just don't aimlessly go out there and market to people, but we understand what our market is, who we're reaching and who we're not reaching. So anything like that would really be helpful, and I think it'd be helpful for the council as well to understand that too in discussing this.
Okay. There we go. Okay, with that, I'll ask if there's any public comment on this before we make a motion.
Thank you, Chair. We have no raised hands in the queue.
Okay. No public comment. My motion is that we continue this item until our August meeting and evaluate additional alternatives as recommended by staff at that time. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. Member Chair made the move. Sorry about that. Is it my on? Chair Shepler made the motion and then seconded by Member Woody. So calling the roll. Chair Shepler?
Yes.
Vice Chair Peck?
Yes.
Committee Member Alexander?
Yes.
And Committee Member Woody?
Yes.
Thank you very much. With that, our next meeting is scheduled for August 16th, and move to adjourn. Thank you.